This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Super J-Cast. I'm Joel, joined by Damon McDonald's and Esther in the background here. Damon, how are you? How's it going?
We are good. How's everything over there? Sounds like you got your hands full with the little one. No songs? Any chance of a song? And just going, you just pop one out? No? Come on.
God, take your pick. I've got hundreds.
I know you do. You're
going to etched into my memory. I wake up in the middle of the night screaming because I've got... I'll tell you what my favourite one is. So my mum sent us this book at Nursery Rhymes from the UK. I may have mentioned this before. And I managed to find a YouTube video where someone had like taken photos or scanned in pages from the book and uploaded the original audio tracks from it, because it used to come with like an audio tape or something.
Okay.
So that's fantastic for us, because a lot of these songs, I didn't know the tunes to. But some of them are just absolutely hilarious. My suspicion is that the people in charge of recording this music were hoping that they would get like talent scouted by a head of a record label with little kids at home. They'd be listening to this thinking, wow, these guys are really good. Let's sign them up. So there's this song called The Little Birds. And it's just like the most innocuous little thing. Like the lyrics, like little bird flaps its wings and flies away in the morning. So, you know, I was thinking when I looked at it initially, some sort of jaunty little tune. But then like on this this video for the original audio, it's turned into like some like 80s power ballad. It's like the little bird flaps its wings and flies away in the morning. Da-na-na. Like these big guitar solos. It's so inappropriate for a little kid's nursery rhyme. I might actually show it because it's so funny. But yeah, that one is my favorite at the moment.
That rules. See, I like that. See, like when they made, and it feels like they do a lot of it now too, like with cartoons and, you know, stuff that's geared toward originally toward kids. But like, if you're an adult, you could sit and watch and find stuff to laugh at. Like Sesame Street did that a lot, where it was like, as you grew older, you kind of got these little subtle jokes and these little side things and like face. Like, again, Kermit the Frog was a fucking sock puppet. I mean, you know, but the faces it would make would just be so, like, how do you do that with your hand in a fucking sock? I definitely appreciate when they were able to make adults laugh at the same time gearing it to our kids. It's pretty fucking great. All right, so a little song, a little ditty about Jack and Diane.
Who's Jack and Diane?
Two American kids. They grew up in the heartland. Jackie was going to be a football star. Come on, you don't know a fucking song. You don't know the song Jack and Diane by John Cougar Mellencamp, or as we call him in this family, John Cougar Menstrual Cramp.
No, I've never heard of these people.
All right, kids, strap in. It's another Damon Music segment.
No, when he started, it was the 80s, right? But he started out, he was like kind of like this grimier Bruce Springsteen, like, because Bruce Springsteen was massive, right? You've heard of Bruce Springsteen, I'm assuming, right?
Yes. Okay. He did a concert at Emirates Stadium once.
I'm sure he did. He probably could sell out easily. Well, he was like, you know, the working man guy, and he was the blue collar singer. And then John Cougar Menstrual Cramp came, and it was kind of, again, like kind of like a grimier version of that. And then he became like Mr. Like what Bob Geldof came to, like Live Aid, he came to like American Farmers. So he had like Farm Aid, and him and Willie Nelson used to go around and smoke weed and fucking grab an acoustic guitar and jerk off Neil Young and all that shit. I don't know if any of that actually happened, but I'm just assuming it did. But his first hit was a song called – no, his first hit was Hurt So Good. which is a bit of a knockoff on the S&M lifestyle, Joel. I don't know if you've heard of Master and Servant, speaking of which, terrible Depeche Mode song. And then his second hit was Jack and Diane, a little tale about two kids growing up in America's heartland and how they were going to get out of that town like every one of those stupid blue-collary rock and roll singers. Everyone had to have that song. Everyone had to have that song of break. Bon Jovi, when he decided he didn't want to wear makeup anymore, had to have that song. Everybody's got to have that. Oh, we're two kids making out in the back of a Coupe de Ville at a drive-in theater with a milkshake in our hand, and we're going to take on the world and go fuck your mother.
Wait, so they're making out with milkshakes in their hand?
Well, of course.
That's the recipe for disaster.
It really is.
It's going to be spillage.
Right. Not only that, the kisses are all viscousy. Ugh. You're just like all thick. Your saliva is all, they're all like intertwining their own milky saliva. Ugh. Terrible.
This took quite a turn.
Really did. It was kind of sexual, didn't it? Kind of sexual. So there you go. You learned about Jack and Diane. You learned about John Cougar Mellencamp, a.k.a. Menstrual Cramp. You learned about little Bruce. You got a favorite Bruce song? I don't.
I think I've only heard of one. I might be making a complete fool of myself here. Born in the USA?
Is Born that in that? The USA is correct.
Yeah, I knew a song. I know a pop song.
It's great job by you. It's great job by you. I mean, you know. Yeah. My favorite is when, like, the politicians will use that because, you know, born in the USA. And it's really a song about, it's a little, I wouldn't say anti-America, but it's about, you know, foreign wars and how the country treated the vets coming back very poorly, Joel, very poorly. So he was kind of mocking the old born in the USA thing.
It's funny that, isn't it? How many songs are of that ilk, which are designed to be satirical, but are appropriated completely as face value by idiots with no understanding of irony. Like the William Blake Jerusalem, which, you know, was supposed to be a satirical interpretation of the state of Britain at the time. You know, he's, you know, talking about beautiful rolling hills when it was gradually were rapidly turning into an industrial wasteland. So he was taking the piss, basically, but there's people who are like, oh, yes, I feel so patriotic listening to this song when it's actually the complete opposite. That annoys me, that kind of stuff. People who have Great Gatsby parties. The whole point of the fucking book is that you're supposed to think how disgustingly decadent and empty-headed these fools are for, you know, wasting their lives having these empty, vacuous parties. But then people say, hey, come to my Gatsby party. I'm like, you haven't read the book, you haven't understood it.
Right. You may have looked at words, but not really comprehended what was going on in those pages. I know. I love that. I like – my favorite one is – I feel like I shock people with this, and I don't intentionally, but I'm just like, you obviously have never listened to the lyrics. You're just tapping your toes like a dope. Are you familiar with Frankie Goes to Hollywood, the band, Joel?
Yes.
And are you familiar? Relax, relax, don't do it when you want. It's about coming. I think specifically about coming with another gentleman. I mean, the whole song is shoot it in the right direction. He basically says, relax when you want to come. That's what he says. The whole song is about him shooting loads everywhere.
I assume that's why it's so popular.
No, I don't think anybody knows, because when I say this, I'm like, it's a song that's like a, you know, a beat little dancey number, but it's all about come. And I'm just like,
oh yeah, isn't it about trying not to come, like trying to delay? Is it Barry Windham?
Yeah, Barry Windham is my goat, and the Russian rocket Pavel Bure. Yes, both. Yes.
Right, so there we go. You successfully connected Frankie Goes to Hollywood with Barry Windham.
Yes, Barry Windham. I wonder. You know, he was local a little bit ago. He was signing an autograph somewhere. And I was really contemplating going up there, just letting him know how much he's helped my sexual life, my performance, He's taking me to new levels. You know, people sometimes look for a medical item, Viagra or other blue pills. Don't want to name names, but I could actually shake a man's hand and be like, you know what, you helped me.
Just don't explain why. Yeah, no, just say, look, you've really helped my sex life. I'd be like, just leave him to ponder that one.
No, I'm going to show him. I'm going to give him a live performance. I'm going to be like, hey, come here, dear. Watch this.
Erect a floppy in seconds. Right. Just by thinking about you.
Right. Come on, Barry. And your long, flowing blonde locks. You know, I've been thinking long and hard about this. This is much better than any New Japan Pro Wrestling talk we could possibly do, right? I mean, we, what, 15 minutes, and I feel like I've laughed several times. I don't know about you, listener. I don't care about you, listener. But I've laughed. I've laughed. It's 6 in the morning, Joel. What am I doing laughing? All this laughing. Laughter, laughter, laughter.
Mm-mm. Yeah, well, as long as we have our fun, that's all that matters, isn't it? Mm-mm. But I mean, it is an exciting time to be a wrestling fan in general, even if the sort of domestic product of New Japan isn't setting the world on fire, because we've got a lot of movers and shakers mm-hmm. in the world of wrestling right now, mm-hmm. people requesting their release from various companies. Ric Flair, when and how are we getting him back to New Japan? Can we get him for his second G1 climax? He was in 95. Am I right in saying that?
90. It was one of the first ones. It was like, because it wasn't like the G1 that we know today, right? And I think in that same one, Steve Austin was in that same one, if my memory serves me correct. But yeah, I know there are a lot of people that are moving around. It's weird because it is this exciting time, and it's like one of my favorite parts of sports is like, you know, we just came off hockey's free agency openings where people can, you know, sign anywhere they want. And, you know, I love that. I love that idea of like a big name moving on to another place. And it keeps things fresh and exciting. Same thing here. It's just weird, though. Like, I do feel, I was kind of thinking of this the other day, how everything is like that. And even, you know, I'm watching AEW and I put it on specifically to watch. I really was like, okay, this is should be fun, and it was a fun fucking show. Loved every second of it. Death match and all, and then even like Impact is, you know, I'll find myself, all right, let me pop on Impact, and you know, I'm popping on Strong. I do feel this little weird disconnect from it, but I think it's coming back. I know for a long period of time my connection with pro wrestling was a weird one for 2 years because I don't know. It was just, I mean, I think everybody can put their finger on the COVID restrictions and the collab crowds and all of that. And I just couldn't sink my teeth into it. Like I couldn't as I could before. And I actually questioned, like, I'm like, am I still a fan of this? I'm like, am I just growing out of it? Or now is the time that I'm no longer as passionate about it. But I feel like a weird sense of passion for it again. And that's growing. And I might have to think of Barry Windham. Because it's getting good.
I feel like, you know, that gif from Les Mis with Russell Crowe in his hat sort of peering through the window. Or the SpongeBob one with, the fella looking through the window while everyone else is having fun outside. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm sort of feeling the excitement vicariously, but I want that excitement to come directly to New Japan. And I'm sure it's coming for Resurgence. I'm sure that's where it's all going to kick off. But it feels like we're sort of holding our nose domestically for the Japan-based product until we're allowed to get full crowds back. You know, God knows how long that's going to be. But it is, not going to lie, it's a struggle. But that said, I think there's plenty to be excited about. Andrew says, how would you fantasy book The Fiend Bray Wyatt's first year in New Japan, bearing in mind the lore of The Fiend? And that is my question. it seems that every time a guy gets released from WWE, someone is saying, oh, this person would be a great fit in New Japan. It's like, come on. Do we have to do this with every single person? Yeah, give me a scale of 1 to 10, how interested you would be. Well, first of all, Ric Flair, and second of all, The Fiend Bray Wyatt in New Japan.
I would say zero Ric Flair. I mean, unless he is coming out and not getting on a microphone and handing over a trophy, a presentation, he nods at the crowd, he waves at the crowd. That's the involvement I want Ric Flair at this point in his career.
Ric Flair versus Toriano?
No, I don't want the man in the ring. And this is coming from someone who, you know, I would put Flair in my top five favorite wrestlers of all time. If he's used wisely and used sparingly and used in a very non-physical, non-get on the mic and woo, I would be okay with that. You know, put on a suit, look like a champ, don't act a fool, we're good. You might not agree with this. And again, certainly not as this nonsense fucking monster face painted comic book wackadoo bullshit.
You really hate Keiji Muto, don't you?
That was good. You know what? You are sharp as a fucking tack, Joel.
I had to do that to make up for the Big Show Boss Man funeral thing from last week.
Well, I just didn't. That was just a real obscure, like, wow. That was a deeper. That was like a sea level angle.
Yeah, I got pelters from that from other people as well. Did, yeah.
Did you? You know what? Maybe they should mind their own business. You know what I mean? We're the stars here. Let us. Would you have a problem with a Bray Wyatt in New Japan Pro Wrestling ring? I would not. I think that might be fun. That could be fun. Again, let's tone down the fucking nonsense. I don't think he's that bad. Do you think he's that bad?
Tone it up. I want a G1 block filled with Evil, The Fiend Bray Wyatt, Malakai Black, Matt Hardy, all these guys given full creative control. Just let them go nuts. I liked the initial Bray Wyatt character, you know, the sort of Dusty Rhodes idea that he gave him, you know, like the cult leader with the
swamp guy. Yes.
Yeah. I thought that was cool. Yeah. His wrestling, I mean, what is his best match? Has he ever had a match that has been pushing 4 stars? I mean, not for me. For me, the work rate's not there personally. A pass. No thanks.
Okay. All right. Not even going to give him a shot on Strong. But he's going AEW anyway.
He's
going
to go back to WWE, I'm sure.
You think so? You think he's just going to sit out a little bit and get back?
Yeah, I suspect a lot of these guys, it's people on massive contracts, and they're going to cut them and then re-sign them to smaller deals.
Yeah.
I think that's what's going on with Strowman, and I'm sure that the same will happen with Wyatt.
Yeah, that makes the most sense. I mean, again, I would not have a huge issue. Here's the problem. So it's not like you're signing a guy. He would have more name, obviously, in the States than he would in Japan. Like, he's going to go out to Japan to just fucking a wall of silence. But here, I mean, it would. I think it would do well. But yeah, you're right. That is the one annoying thing. Is anybody who leaves is, good fit for New Japan, good fit for New Japan. And you're right, not everybody is. I don't know, maybe, I don't know. I wouldn't have a problem. I wouldn't have a huge problem with that. I really wouldn't, as shocking as that sounds. And his body of work and the fucking funhouse bullshit and all that, not my cup of tea. But I still think that there's something you could do with the guy. If you just let him go do his thing. But I mean, I don't know. I mean, do you think a lot of that stuff was him, or do you think a lot of that stuff was go out there and do this? You know what I mean? Like, I think if he knew the environment and knew the lay of the land, I think he could make it work. I think he could. I think there's bigger fish to fry when it comes to available people out there and people that are more sexy. And sexier names, that's for sure. If they're going to get in a New Japan ring, there's other people that I want in line first. But again, it's one of those things of, okay, we got this guy who apparently is a free agent, and can he fit into what we can do, and how much money is that going to cost? See, I kind of do like all that shit. That's the kind of shit I like. Like, building a fantasy roster is better than fucking playing the games. Like, the best part of any fantasy draft is the draft. and then having it come, you know, play it out is sometimes a little tedious, but that's, to me, that's fun. I like that, the idea of, okay, how would we do this? How would we put this guy into our roster? How would we make this fit? I do kind of get my rocks off on that.
Yeah, there's certainly plenty to get RT stuck into with our door. I don't want to call it the forbidden door. Let's call it the friendship door. Let's check in on the friendship door. So we had Lance Archer defeating Hikuleo. Hikuleo challenged for the IWGP US title. Yeah. I think it was Fight for the Fallen. Did you watch this match?
I did.
Oh, yeah, you did. You watched the show live. Yeah, I watched it. Popped up on World. That's one thing I like, that with this relationship, you get these individual matches appearing on New Japan World a day or two after the fact. So, yeah, I watched it. It was, I thought it was really smart having Haku walk out with him. That was a great way to get the crowd invested in him. And I think I really noticed Hikuleo seemingly energized by working in front of a crowd. Like, he really seemed to feed off of that Haku pop and no pun intended, and use that energy to ramp up his confidence and intensity right off the bat. And he carried himself like he belonged in there. And, you know, just a little thing, like at the start of the match, he did a power slam, and that got an awe from the crowd. And then you could see him like visibly react to that and turn to the camera. So I think he's looking a lot more polished here. So short match, but yeah, for me, it was like, when I watched this, the acid test was going to be, does Hikuleo look like he belongs there on TV against the, you know, starlight Lance Archer? And I think he did.
Yeah, it was an okay match. I mean, it wasn't anything tremendous, but I think it did what it needed to do, in the sense of, okay, Lance Archer beat a big guy clean in the middle of the ring, and Hikuleo didn't trip over his own feet and didn't get in his own way and looked like he belonged there. And he got some quality ring time on live TV, in prime time in the U.S., in front of a full crowd. I mean, there was a lot of check boxes that we were able to accomplish here in one match. And at the same time, set up, you know, something that might have been, you know, 3-4 weeks ago, a little bit unexpected. Now we got something I don't think I've ever really would say I wanted it, but I'm kind of into it. I'm kind of into a little Lance Tana. But that's again, that seems like a did they ever wrestle in a G1, Lance and
yeah, they were in the same block when Arch was last in. It was 2019, wasn't it?
I do
remember them having a pretty good match.
Okay, I do not remember it off the top of my head, so forgive me. But yeah, I mean, that's again, the idea of a live crowd really is, it's the icing. It is the icing on the cake, because that'll be fun. That'll be fun.
Vase Collector says, is Lance Archer back in Suzuki-gun? If so, I'm pretty pumped he was killing it before he left. I don't think he ever left. Mm-hmm. Suzuki-gun is for life. So even, you know, after he joined AEW, he was talking how he still feels like he's part of the crew. But yeah, that's a match I'm looking forward to. I don't know if this is just sort of a convoluted way to get the US title back on Japanese soil without Moxley having to lose directly to a New Japan guy. I don't know. I expect Tanahashi to win that, but no, we'll be previewing Resurgence near at the time. We also have an announcement for Resurgence with John Moxley and Mystery Partner X versus the Good Brothers, which I assume was supposed to be Shota Umino, but he's unable to travel, unfortunately. So any thoughts on this, Damon? Any speculation who you think the partner might be?
Bray Wyatt.
Ric Flair.
Richard Flair. Would that be fucking good? You know what? If we're doing it, let's do it. That would be, imagine that.
It did say on the New Japan website or one of the tweets, something official came out saying Moxley's drinking buddy. So when it said drinking buddy, I was like, well, it's not CM Punk, is it? Because he's straight edge.
Correct. Yeah.
Unless he's going to drinking Pepsi with him. Ric Flair, you know, he's a big drinker, isn't he?
He does.
Night on the tiles.
Yeah. Wouldn't that be funny? Wouldn't that? I'm not going to lie. That would be amazing. And I just sat here and said, don't put him in the ring. I don't want to see the woos. I might want to now. I don't know how to feel.
I know Ric Flair is, what, how old? He's
70. Right? Right?
Gosh, I think he was, yes, yeah, over 70, I think.
Yeah.
I think he's in his early 70s. Yeah, probably shouldn't have, has no business getting in a wrestling, but could he be any worse than the Good Brothers? No, I'm joking. I jest. I mean, I've seen people saying maybe Sami Callihan could be the partner. It could be maybe Eddie Kingston.
Okay.
There's a couple of names that people have thrown out there.
I tell you what, it is, they have a ton of options, right? They have a ton of options with the door, whatever adjective we want to put in front of door, there's so many possibilities now. And that makes it fun. Maybe we'll get Nick with his pizza cutter coming out again. That'd be fun. That'd be great. Watching him carve up everybody. I gotta talk about that, dude. That match. Did you see it? The Jericho?
No, I didn't. Yeah, unfortunately, I don't have a way. Dynamite is not on Thai television. I don't have any access to it, I'm afraid. But talk to us about the match.
Okay. Again, this is primetime television on, dare I say, a major cable television network. And AEW is doing pretty well for itself. It's one of those things where, you know, you'll be watching whatever and a commercial for it will be on. So it's got, I don't want to say broad appeal, but you know, it's again prime time on Tuesday night, Wednesday night. The first match, multi-man tag. It was like a 10-man tag, and it had Dark Order. I know, roll your eyes, but Dark Order and against Kenny and Good Brothers and Young Bucks. Joe, when I tell you this match was 55,000 miles an hour of just pure wrestling nonsense fun, high spot, it was really good. It was constant and just, I dug it. I was just like, this match fucking is great. Again, it was like, you know, like junk food. Right. Or like, you know, or like delicious fat. It was like Popeye's fried chicken. It was delicious, but totally not good for you. Right. That's the best way I can describe it. Fucking fantastic. Give me another piece. I'm going to die of a heart attack. And then there was the Hikaleo and Lance and what else was on, a couple other things. But then this match, I guess, started right a little bit before 9 o'clock, I guess, our time. I couldn't believe, like, I'm watching this match and Cheryl's on the couch and you knew it was going to be bloody. You knew they were going to bleed. But the first match, Jericho gets the pizza cutter right across the fucking arm. I mean, it was like a switchblade. It was like just whip. And you see his arm, like the skin and his, it just like kind of like, you know, whoop, open up and he starts to bleed. And I'm like, whoa, here we go. Did a little dusty arm bleed spot. And then they just did everything, Joel. Joel, they did everything you would expect in a fucking Big Japan death match. From chairs to light tubes to, and I'm not talking about like they and here's the thing, Jericho took 90% of it. And I'm like, why is he doing this? He's 50-something years old. He's done everything there is. Headline buildings in Japan and in the U.S. and WrestleManias and Wrestle Kingdoms. Blah, blah, blah. And this guy is getting tossed into, they had a sheet of glass. They had two chairs, sheet of glass between the two, taking bumps into the glass. Again, the light tubes, the fucking pizza cutter shit. Like, it was unbelievable. Jericho's back. Again, was straight out of Big Japan Pro Wrestling. It was just bloody from the top of his neck to his ass crack was just sliced. It was unbelievable what I was watching. Again, I've seen it a trillion times. I just couldn't believe I was watching it live on TNT. It was amazing. It was like, it would be, honestly, it would be the equivalent of, all right, Monday Night Football is over. Let's watch some porn. You know what I mean? They'll be like, okay, I don't even know what the big show is on US TV now. What would be CSI? So I'll just throw out there. I don't even know if it is or if it isn't. But CSI is on. And then right after that, they put, you know, Riley Reed's Ass Bangers 4. That would be the equivalent with the violence that I saw. Oh, man, I got to put on Ass Bangers 4. I haven't seen that in a while. Good. But it was good. It was really, it was one of the most I hate saying entertained, but like I was thoroughly entertained for that entire block of pro wrestling. I couldn't believe what I was watching. And they made the announcement for Chicago, which so everybody knew Punk. I don't know. It's fun. Here's what it is. When all this is going down, all I'm thinking of is, okay, New Japan is in this mix. Like we're in this pot, this stew. Like we're a main ingredient in this stew, and it's all coming together. It's all coming together. I'm telling you, Joel, they're going to do a big show. And when I mean big show, I mean an outdoor stadium. I just feel it in my bones that these guys are going to cash in. And they're going to put their chips in, and we're going to have a big show. The problem is this: football season's coming right around the corner, so I don't know when they would do it. They have to do it in a dome because winter would be around, and nobody's going to sit outside and freeze their fucking nuts off. But I'm telling you, they have to be looking at a big fucking stadium show, and they could do it. They could do it. I guarantee it.
Sort of very interesting tweet from our Voices of Wrestling friend Garrett Kidney. He said, remember when WWE were negotiating with New Japan or whatever? Now, one main event for New Japan's big US show is being promoted on Dynamite, while the other main event is being promoted on Impact. So, right. Yeah, you got to sort of tip your hat to the way that this has been managed in being able to get their US-based product promoted like this. So a few questions. Bash says, how do you guys feel about all the storyline booking going on in different companies right now? You got Jay and Finjuice in Impact, US title and AEW, whereas before it was all booked onto New Japan shows. Classic Catch says, given that there's more New Japan storyline progression taking place on AEW and Impact shows than actual New Japan shows, so do you think you should start reviewing them instead? And Chuck Sizzleby says, since Jay popped up on Impact, how long do you think till GOD makes an appearance? They all live in Florida with huge shows like the Rampage debut, Grand Slam, and All Out coming up. A running could generate a lot of buzz for New Japan here in the States. I'm sure that is coming very, very soon. I'm sure GOD are going to be getting involved, so... I don't think you'll have to wait too long for that one. But yeah, so general thoughts. I mean, you've touched on this, Damon. It's a big thumbs up, I think, for New Japan managing to get the name out there in the States.
Yeah, everybody's getting work in a time when it's, you know, it's still somewhat difficult from a Japanese perspective. You know, it's tough sledding right now over there. Lockdowns and COVIDs and all that stuff. So, okay, they made the most of it. They created a product that has it's now a cornerstone for good shit happening with Strong, right? So they were smart there, very wise. I mean, and again, we talked about Strong just being the thing where, okay, just people could go and wrestle, for crying out loud, let alone shows and live events and involvement and becoming a destination place. And again, all the and through all this, here's the great thing. There's two things. what is it? A high tide carries all boats. Is that the saying? And when one promotion does well, and if they're able to carry other ones along with it to help support, that just makes for a better experience. And if you're a fan of pro wrestling, it just makes things better all around. And the second part of this is this. For the first time in my lifetime, I really feel like, maybe not the first time, but the first time in a long, long time, in my lifetime, and I am fucking old, there is a definite, again, we're not putting anybody out of business. We're not. You know, there's a lot of money in the McMahon reserves. But what I'm saying is that for the first time, I really feel like there are viable options, not only from a product standpoint, because I always knew that there was other wrestling out there, New Japan included, that had a better in-ring product and a better presentation and a better pro wrestling experience. I feel like we actually have a period of time where, and again, WCW might have been the closest thing to that in my lifetime, where there's a genuine threat to the old, just preposterous idea of a 70-year-old man running a pro wrestling company and telling people what's good and what's not for decades. And now finally we have options. We have real, legitimate, true options that again, we can nitpick, agree with some things, we can like other things, all that. But at the end of the day, the combined product, combined forces, and again, I hate to say this, but we have COVID to thank. Ugh. I don't know if that's the word I want, but okay. But like this would not have happened if we didn't have a reason to do it. And sometimes the worst case scenarios, you know, what is it? Pressure forms diamonds or something. Like that. And that's what we got. Like we have maybe the most exciting time to be a pro wrestling fan since, again, the Monday Night Wars, even before that, maybe like, you know, Crockett and WWF, you know, in 86. That's it. That's really what we have to sink our teeth into, at least in the States. I mean, Japan might be a different story than it is, but again, my point being is this. What a time to be a pro wrestling fan. And it's only going to get better.
Well, I hate to drag the conversation kicking and screaming away from all the exciting stuff in the States, but we should touch on the Summer Struggle event. The one I want to talk about was Sunday, August 1st at Korakuen Hall. The two send-off matches I'd like to discuss. So first match was Yuya Uemura's send-off match where he lost to Kazuchika Okada in 12 minutes, 19 seconds by money clip. The match was good. I mean, as you'd expect, but I think it's more notable for what it represents, the choice of opponent. And other people have said this, Manabu said this to me, you know, it felt like a pairing that you will see in the future having an IWGP world title match, Okada versus Uemura. And just that little bit at the end where after the match, Okada picks him up and gives him the Irish whip and just drop kicks him just for good measure. That felt significant for me. That feels like the sort of thing we're going to be seeing again in the future, doesn't it?
Yep, that was, you know, a not so subtle breadcrumb. And I loved it. I was there for it. You know what I mean? Like I jumped out of my chair, but I thoroughly enjoyed the idea of just that little exclamation point of see you soon, kid. You know, have fun. See you in a year or two. I'll be waiting for you. We'll do this dance again, and it'll be for bigger stakes. I'll tell you who I really enjoyed during this match and even the other one. The solo Kevin Kelly. I thought he did a outstanding job. I don't know if you listened to the English commentary. Did an outstanding job just getting over the dojo system, what it means, you know, why these guys do what they do, the process that they have to go through, what, how significant these matches are, how significant it was for it being Okada, how significant it was it being Naito.
In the hobby, it's not easy being a fan of ripping packs or repacks. We hype ourselves up thinking, maybe I can pull a Ken Griffey Jr. rookie card, but with zero transparency on available cards and hit rates, it's all just a shot in the dark. Until now. Introducing Slab Packs from ArenaClub.com, the only repack that provides real value, a complete view of all possible cards, and clear hit rates for each one. Now, when I buy Slab Packs at Arena Club, it finally feels like I know what I'm getting. I was able to open an Arena Club slab pack, and I'll be honest, it was a lot better than what you normally do. Say you go to a card show and there's a random innocuous brown bag of cards, and yeah, you can open it and look, it's going to be junk. You know what I mean? Like, you know what you're probably going to get in those. Maybe you find that fun, and sometimes I do. Sometimes I like just opening up cards and saying, ah, hey, look at some random cards or whatever. But if you're really in this game to find value and find particular cards, it sucks to have to buy these mystery packs, and it ends up being, you know, almost nothing, you know, nothing of value. Not with Arena Club. You get a display, again, of all available cards, hit rates, grading, so you know that when you're opening up the slab pack, you are going to get something valuable. You are getting something good. And Arena Club, in addition to having those great slab packs we just talked about, is also a marketplace for card collecting, buying, trading, selling, displaying, all that sort of stuff. But those Arena Club slab packs, man, they are revolutionizing the repack game with transparency. After your pulls are revealed, they'll immediately be placed in your vault for safekeeping or trading and selling, and you can have them officially graded by Arena Club as well. So again, setting these things off, it's going to be officially graded by Arena Club. And the Arena Club grading process is accurate, fast, and transparent, with full grade rationale provided and explanation of how your card was scored. So whether you're buying, selling, trading, or displaying, Arena Club is the card collecting platform that you have to check out. So right now, I've got a special offer here for Voices of Wrestling Network listeners. You can get 10% off of your first purchase by going to arenaclub.com/VOWnet. Again, that's arenaclub.com/VOWnet. Now, that's a crazy offer. That's 10% off a $400 slab pack. $40 off right there. 10% off your first purchase. No matter what that purchase is, 10% off. Off. Again, that's arenaclub.com/VOWnet, arenaclub.com/VOWnet for 10% off your first purchase on Arena Club. And we thank them for sponsoring the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. What's going on, guys? This is Rich from the Flagship Podcast here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. If I could have a moment of your time, I'd like to tell you about one of our sponsors, Eufy Video Lock. Eufy Video Lock is a smart lock, a 2K camera, and a doorbell, all 3-in-1, offering you triple security. So you can have everything in one device rather than installing many pieces on your front door. But it's not just for security. The Eufy Video Lock is also for convenience. No more concerns about losing keys, and you can assign passwords to your family members and see them coming back home via the integrated cameras. Some other great features we love about the Eufy Video Lock is it is easy to install and set up with just a Phillips screwdriver, no drilling required. Keyless entry, no more fumbling for keys when your hands are full. You never have to worry about kids losing keys or passing among renters. You also have 0.3 second fingerprint recognition and 1 second unlocking. Again, 0.3 seconds, it's going to recognize your fingerprints, and in 1 second, it's going to unlock. And with the AI self-learning chip embedded, the more you use it, the more accurate it will be. Also, no battery anxiety. You have a rechargeable battery in there that could last around 4 months, and you will get a low battery notification before it runs out. Passcode unlocking, a remote control with a 2K clear sight, see who's at your door, and control from anywhere through the Eufy app. With enhanced night vision, you can have optimized view even in the evening. You can also secure your package delivery by view and two-way audio. And then best of all, no monthly fee. A bunch of other brands out there are going to charge you a monthly fee. You have your recordings locally and you never have to pay for storage. Customer service, Eufy's got you handled as well. They are on standby for you 24/7, so you can enjoy a worry-free experience with an 18-month warranty, all backed by their professional customer service team. Contact them anytime by telephone, email, or live chat. Personally, as a homeowner, I love my Eufy video lock. I have the ability to see what's going on when I'm not home, when packages has arrived, and really the thing I love the most about it, the ease of being able to lock and unlock my doors without having to fumble with my keys, reach in my pocket, or wait, no, crap, they're in my backpack, all that sort of stuff. All this is happening while my dogs are barking at me. You know what? Not anymore with the Eufy video lock. I touch it, 0.3 second fingerprint recognition, 1 second, door is unlocked. Much, much easier. So if you want to jump on board with Eufy Video Lock, search Eufy Video Lock. That is E-U-F-Y Video Lock. Again, that's Eufy Video Lock, E-U-F-Y Video Lock, or visit eufyofficial.com/videolock to see how you can gain complete control of your door.
Again, even the little subtle things like, you know, Naito coming out in you know, what would he would consider a big match show outfit, if that's the word, gear, you know, the white. Just there's little subtle things that I thought it was refreshing to hear. Like it didn't, you know how sometimes commentary just, it's just like, it just pounds you in the head. Like it just felt like a nice laid back Kevin Kelly doing his thing, no distractions, calling matches, giving information. I really enjoyed it. And what sucked was, it was like the last thing I did before I went to bed. I wanted to hit him up and just let him know that I really appreciated that. Like, I really thought he did an outstanding job with those two matches specifically going solo.
Yes, I'm in total agreement there. The second match, Yotsusugi send-off, where he lost to Tetsuya Naito, 11 minutes 24, by high-angle Boston Crab. This one, I mean, I love this one. I really enjoyed it, Damon, because we had the backstory into it that Yotsusugi really, really wanted this match. You know, been campaigning for it on Twitter, saying if he gets, what was it, 50,000 likes or something, and he didn't quite manage to get that. It almost sort of felt like an audition for him for a future spot in LIJ. But here it was Suji's most complete performance for me. He looked more confident than he's ever looked, and everything was on point in the ring. It was crisp. It was sharp. He looked like a guy who was ready to become a star. And just a little story at the end, like with the backstage stuff, he said if he was going to lose, he wanted to lose to the Destino. But Naito said, look, I only use the Destino when I need it. I didn't need it against you. Maybe one day you'll be worthy of me using the Destino on you. So again, we're just planting those little breadcrumbs for, you know, something to look forward to when he gets back. But yeah, I thought Suji was really, really terrific here.
Yeah, both were. Both were. And I appreciate the fact that Naito had somewhat of his working boots on, right? Like he didn't sandbag this match. Like he went. If it felt like he did anyway. Man, the future's bright, man. Future's bright. And I say this all the time, every time we do one of these little send-off nights. Man, I just think it's fun and it's heartwarming a little bit too, where it's like I always look at facial expressions and I always look at body language and I always look at like how they exit the ring, knowing full well that like, okay, this is a chapter in your life that has ended. We're going to now open up a new chapter and just kind of like, I don't know, get in their heads and think, okay, what are you thinking? You know, like what, how are you feeling? Cause it is a big thing. It's, you know, again, one of the points that, and I knew a little bit about it, but certainly not a lot, but even Kevin, again, once again, Kevin Kelly mentioning how guys spend a year just doing chores and doing exercises and doing, you know, simple pro wrestling training in that dojo system before they even step foot outside the ring in a t-shirt at Corken Hall. Imagine the feeling of, I mean, you graduated college or you graduated university or you, man, that's maybe the best way I can describe it is that, you know, okay, now I'm going away on excursion for a year or two and I'm leaving everything that I've had for, you know, 3-4 years. And now I'm going to go see the world. It is an interesting and remarkable process that they have for developing stars. And, you know, they don't miss often. They don't. And it's just a, I mean, it might be rough and it might be, I don't know. It's not, it's certainly not for everybody. That's for sure. And it wasn't for everybody in the '90s. Like there were people that went to that dojo with it. They did not survive. But the people, man, who come out the other side of it, I'm telling you, they're the best pro wrestlers in the world. Best pro wrestlers in the world. And I love the fact that it still goes to this day with little tweaks and little variations, but for the most part, it's the same. And that I can truly appreciate. Like there is something to be said about the tradition of it, and as well as the fact that it's relatively the same. And you can see the results, right? You can see the results.
So Diego says, where are Tsuji and Uemura going? I'm pretty sure we're going to see Tsuji in the UK. Uemura, I would like to see going to the US because as we talked about ad nauseum, there's so many exciting opportunities and people you could learn from there. So yeah, if I had to guess with Uemura, I'd say the States. But yeah, Louis says, which young lions have had good send-off matches? I remember Kawato, aka Master Watto, having a good send-off as well as Shota Umino. Any that stick in your mind?
Hiromu's was pretty decent. Trying to think back, many of them. I know it was against, like, I just remember them as young lions, and I don't know if I necessarily remember their send-off matches like Okada's. Like, I know it was against Tanahashi, but I don't, for whatever reason, it doesn't stick out in my mind as, you know, I'm sure it was great, but I don't remember it. I don't remember Naito's send-off match. A lot of them, I don't want to say never made the, you know, before World, it wasn't like people went out of their way and you'd have to watch them later when people post them on YouTube or shit like that. And remember what shows what. But I think that's one thing about World, man, and the network, is that you get to see that shit. Like, you know, no one, let me be very honest, no one, and I mean no one, was like, oh, this is Okada send-off. You know, nobody said that. Nobody said that. And now it's a thing. I like that. I like that it is. And we complain about, oh, you get every fucking show on this network and every Road to show. And, oh, my God, we got to watch all this shit. Which circles back to a point that we made, that we got to watch all this shit now, Joel. How are we consuming this stuff? Let me ask you this. How are you consuming all this stuff? Because somebody posed the question like, okay, so we got shit going on everywhere. Do I got to watch all this shit? Do we got to review all this shit? I'm cherry picking right now. I can't watch everything. I got to be honest with you. I am cherry picking the New Japan stuff and trying to watch what I can, but I can't watch it all. Like, how are we going to cover all this shit? This is not convenient. This is not convenient.
Yeah, pick and choose. I mean, like, for example, this show that we're discussing now, I watched the first two matches and I watched the main event. So, and all the other Road 2 shows in the week, I didn't bother with those. So, yeah, you pick and choose what is significant for you. Otherwise, you're going to get burnt out.
I can't. I don't have the time to I guess that's what you got to do. But then, again, you got to remember that shit is everywhere. Like,
it is getting really hard to keep on top of this all because there's so much going on with, you know, in Japan, and then there's Strong, and then there's stuff going on at AEW, and there's stuff going on Impact. It does make your head spin at times.
Yeah, it's like, I feel like everything's crammed in at once. I just wake up and look at my phone and be like, okay, what do I got to do today? You know, like, I don't.
Yeah, I've never had to do that before, but I feel like I'm not doing it for you, like, but for both of us, just so, okay, so these are we've got to watch this and we've got to watch this. And often it's spanning, like, four or five different shows, three different promotions. It's hard.
It is hard. I mean, hard as in, it's not like you just pop on New Japan World and go from there. Like, there is a lot, there's a couple other things where you got to check out just because of where we are and what we do. So yeah, it's a little bit a little bit less convenient, that's for sure. But again, we'll add the all right, would you take this over what we had before? I would take this any day of the week, right? I just feel like there's so much more to talk about.
Yeah, definitely. And it feels like there is something exciting to look forward to. It feels like there's a Christmas is coming, right, but you don't know when. It's like, right, we're still having Christmas this year, but we're not going to tell you when it is.
Right, but it's April 17th. Right, right. Yeah, yeah. That's exactly what it feels like. That's exactly what it feels like. And every day, but okay, so here we go. It's Christmas. You don't know when it's going to happen, but also we're going to give you gifts randomly. To, you know, whatever, just on a Tuesday, you know, you don't come home and there's going to be a big box under a tree, right? Because that's what it feels like, because you wake up every day and it's like, oh, that this is happening. And oh, you know? And here's the thing too, like, I kind of feel like this show, to a certain degree, is flying a little bit without a net, because we'll get clued in on some stuff, but I guarantee you, a lot of the people that we talk to, they don't know what's going on, which is kind of a weird thing, right? Like, it's not like – it feels like things change so quickly and things happen so quickly that they don't even have time to get us information, right? Doesn't it feel that way too?
Yeah, I think there's so many moving parts involved that, you know, I don't want to sort of delude myself into thinking that we are so important that they can tell us what they're doing.
Yeah, we absolutely are. Yeah, we are.
But you've got to think that these are conversations that are taking place across multiple companies now. So it's, yeah, I can understand if a conversation happens between, let's say for the sake of argument, Tony Khan and Rocky Romero, then is that information necessarily going to filter back to in the way that it normally would when New Japan had planned to do something in the States by themselves? Do you know what I mean?
Right, right. You know, there were many methods in which information got to us. Right. And it just seems like it's such a moving part right now that it's hard to get that. It's weird. It is a very...
I like it.
Me too.
I like the fact that people, like, for example, when Kenta popped up on Dynamite, it's like, wow, you know, it's not something that we would say on the podcast 3 weeks earlier. Oh, you might want to watch for Kenta having a pastrami sandwich of right. Dynamite, blah, blah, blah. I like the fact that it's unpredictable. That's how wrestling should be. It's fun.
It is fun. It is fun. Now, listen, that's not to say we don't want to, you know, we like our scoops, you know, yeah, for nothing. We like our pastrami sandwiches. We're the best, you know. That being said, though, yeah, it is. It does feel like everything is moving parts. Everything is moving parts, and that is exciting, because I kind of do like the idea of waking up and checking my phone and being like, whoa, okay, here we go. What does this mean for us? What does this mean for New Japan? What does this mean for the show? What does this mean for, all right, we got more things we can talk about. So yeah, I mean, it's, look. Talking about this is so much better than, okay, you know, 36-man New Japan Cup in an empty arena. You know what I mean? Sometimes that gets just to be a little much, right? Right? Right.
Yeah, because it does feel like treading water at times.
Exactly right. Exactly right. It felt like a lot of the stuff that was going on was just to get through it. Just to get through. We got to put on shows. We don't know how to put on shows in this environment. We just got to get pushed through it, and eventually this will be over. But even as I say that, again, they did make some smart moves. Joel, the smartest thing they fucking did was Strong. The smartest thing they did was Strong. And again, it has grown into what it is. I mean, they didn't sit there and say, okay, we're going to have a – you know, it become what it's become, but it's, I mean, they're going to have a show that is going to be, I mean, we haven't had a match yet, but can you comfortably say this will be in contention, this show without seeing a match is in contention for show of the year? I mean, just on paper?
I'd say there's a shot. Just for sort of the excitement of being in front of a live crowd again. And I put out a Twitter poll because I was just thinking, you know, we've got Wrestle Grand Slam coming up, two nights in the Saitama, in the dome there.
MetLife, yeah.
MetLife, yeah. And we've got, you know, title defenses there, Shingo defending his title there. But we've also got Resurgence coming up. And I was just curious what people were more excited about. So I did a Twitter poll. 360 people voted. 78.6% more excited for Resurgence. So, and I'm with them on that. I can't wait for that show.
I think everybody is. Again, the idea of a live show that is going to be a little bit like off the beaten path in the sense of, I'm not going to say dream matches, but it's going to be different, and it's going to, I don't know, man. I feel more juice, pardon the pun. And when is this? This is in August, this month. It's the 14th, like a week from now, right? The 14th. Jesus. That seemed like it snuck up on us, right? And what do we got? We got Lance against Hiroshi Tanahashi, right? Jay White's on this thing against Finley, right? For the Never, right?
Yep, correct.
Mox and then Anderson and Gallows. Okay. Mm-hmm. What are the roster?
We've got Alex Coughlin against Carl Fredericks as well. The Alex Coughlin challenge series. And we have a six-man tag, Rocky, Fred Rosser, and Wheeler Yuta against Renarita, Clark Connors, and TJP.
Okay, maybe I'm a little bit out of my mind with the show of the year. I can be very good. But it's a good show, right? It is a good show.
Just for the sheer fact of having a crowd who can make noise. That is just the prospect that is so exciting for me.
It is. Do we know how is it sold out yet? Do we know?
I'm not sure. I'd have to check up on that.
Right. I don't know where I would go. I'm sitting right in front of a computer, but I'm excited. This should be a fun time. And if I'm not mistaken, the last thing I heard was we're really close to having a sold show. So, good for New Japan. We're looking good. LA is going to be rocking. We just need to make sure everybody's safe, right? We
know from WrestleTix.
That's
Twitter.
Right.
So they updated on August the 2nd. They said there are 153 tickets available now.
All right. And you know, so that's
93% sold.
Excellent job. Excellent job, everybody. Well done. Well done. I will not be there. But I will be watching on my couch. That's a great job. That's exciting. It'll be one of the biggest gates for New Japan of the year.
So back to Japanese New Japan. Vase Collector says, wondering what's up with the Japanese dojo these days, all things considered. We haven't seen any new young lions in what feels like a long time. The current group is also starting to move up. Will we see any new young lions in the ring in 2021? How big of a hit has the pandemic had on the New Japan training pipeline? We do have Yuto Nakashima, who I'm expecting to be back from injury soon. But aside from that, I haven't heard anything about any new Japanese talent coming through, which, you know, is that a worry to you, Damon?
I remember in the past there was like this push to get talent in there. I think like Tanahashi was spearheading that. No. Because here's the thing. I'd rather have quality than quantity, right? I don't need to see a bunch of young lions there just to see a bunch of young lions there. I want to see the guys who have a shot at being legitimate stars for this promotion. And I think we will see people. And I think you will see new faces at ringside, and there'll be people taking pictures at ringside, and then that tweet will go out and who's that guy? And, you know, then, you know, everybody's on the horn trying to find out who these people are. So I think you'll probably see that sooner than later, to be honest. So no, I'm not too concerned about that. And again, there are people that are in that dojo that you have not even seen their face yet. You have not seen them at ringside. That again, eventually you will, and all these people will move up. I don't really have major concerns with that. Nope.
Let's talk about the main event of the show, which was the NEVER Openweight Six-Man Tag Team Championship match with the champions Ishii, Yoshihashi, and Hiroki Goto with their eighth successful defense against Minoru Suzuki, Zack Sabre Jr., and Taichi. Goto got the pin over Suzuki following the GYW. And prior to this match, Ishii had mentioned something along the lines of he thinks that if Suzuki-gun lost this one, then Suzuki-gun should rename themselves to Taichi-gun. Didn't mention that on commentary, so I guess that was Ishii just riffing. But that's something I would love to see explored in the future, because it does feel like Taichi is, feels like the de facto leader of the faction at the moment. But yeah, I enjoyed this match a lot. The start with Ishii and Suzuki elbowing each other in the teeth, exactly what you want to see from Suzuki there. And just a small thing here, Goto and Yoshihashi, they set up a counter to the Taichi choke, just adding a little something for their upcoming three-way tag title challenge. And you know me, I'm a sucker for team moves. Every time I see a team move, it's an automatic extra quarter star for me. Like there was a moment where Zack and Suzuki had Goto in the Boston Crab, one leg each, and then Taichi slid in to apply the choke. Yes, please. Yeah. That's my kind of stuff there. I thought the arm work from Zack and Ishii was good. Ishii is not a guy who's renowned for his selling, but I thought he did it really well here. I thought Yoshihashi and Taichi had really good chemistry. I don't think they've had a singles match, not one that I can remember. And I think it'd be really good, because I thought the parts when they were working together in this match were very, very fun. And again, this is 35 minutes, but I never felt these matches, they don't drag for me. I think when you've got six quality wrestlers, they've got no problem filling that time with meaningful, entertaining work. And the final 10 minutes is always a blast. You've got your tornado tag style mayhem. You've got near falls, people rescuing each other from submission, selling the exhaustion. Suzuki and Goto had a really fun exchange that brought me back to my first Wrestle Kingdom trip in 2018, Wrestle Kingdom 12, with that excellent NEVER hair versus title match. And Suzuki even broke out the dropkick here. You know, Minoru Suzuki respects the NEVER six-man titles, whatever you might say. And I like that they finished the match with the GYW, the double team move. Team moves, Damon. I'm a simple man. I love that stuff. So eight successful defenses in the bag for this team.
Wow. That's pretty amazing, actually, if you think about it, considering it was largely considered a title that was, I don't want to say throwaway, but it was largely considered a throwaway title. I mean, you know, nobody was this excited for the NEVER six-man titles when the Briscoes were holding it with, you know, whomever. Yeah, I liked the match. I thought the match was good. 35 minutes. I mean, look, I'm not going to lie. I had my moments where I was looking at my phone a little bit. I'm not going to lie. But that being said, I'll tell you what surprised me the most. Again, it's the fact that it's not the usual pin eaters that you would – like if you took that lineup, I think normally people would be like, okay, either Yoshihashi or Taichi, right? Would take that fall. And the fact that it's Goto over Suzuki was pretty, I don't want to say crazy, but I did not expect to see Suzuki take that fall. And I mean, somebody's taking the fall and you can't drop me. I mean, if one team's losing, they're losing the titles. And I don't think anybody would complain if Suzuki-gun won those titles, right? Would anybody complain with that? I don't think so. I think that's a big enough name for it to happen. Not to say that people wanted it to happen, but I'm just saying nobody would complain. It's not like it's, you know, like a Chase Owens and Yujiro and, you know, Togo. I was a little bit surprised by the fact that it was Suzuki that took a fall in a multi-man tag for the NEVER six-man titles. I think that says a little bit more about what the titles are, though, right? If anything else, less than, oh, it was Suzuki that took the fall. It was more like, okay, yeah, these titles are elevated to the point where a guy like Suzuki can take a fall. I don't know. That's pretty. You know, we talk about.
I want to talk about Suzuki for a moment. There, okay. Like, where would you rank him at the moment within his own faction?
As top guy, the leader. I mean, I think he's
leader. Or even just your personal enjoyment of the wrestlers as Suzuki-gun.
He's up
like
there.
For me personally, I would. He is below Taichi and Zack and Despy at the moment.
Wow.
So he's in. Okay. Yeah, I've just enjoyed the output of those three wrestlers more than Suzuki.
I think when Suzuki's on, I love him. Nah, Suzuki's still in my top. Like, it's like Zach is my favorite. Suzuki might be second. And then I think Despy, Taichi, Kanemaru. And even though Kanemaru I haven't, you know, down the bottom of the pile, it's that's not like a, he just has to be there because I still like him, right? Again, might be my favorite faction. Nah, Suzuki's near the top for me anyway. But again, I get your point where if you look at the past 6 months, year, maybe even longer, Zach and Taichi have carried, and even Desperado, carried this faction. It, like, name me the significant moments. Name me the significant Suzuki moments in the past year and a half, compared to the output of Zach, Taichi, and even El Desperado. Like, I get your point there.
So we've got a few matches have been announced. So we've got the next challengers for the Never Six Man Titles lined up for the Yokohama show on August the 10th. It's going to be LIJ challenging, so Naito, Sanada, and Bushi. And also on that show, we've got Shingo versus Yujiro in a non-title singles match. And a couple of announcements for Wrestle Grand Slam. I think this is night one. So Jeff Cobb and Okada having their rematch, as we speculated last week. And Toriano versus Chase for KOPW. I believe it's going to be an I Quit match. Maybe a more serious match there. If the post-match beatdown and promos are anything to go by, like, KOPW needn't be comedy filler. So maybe some green shoots emerging there. So yeah, any thoughts on those match announcements?
Well, I quit with the K. Can I tap out? Can I? I would love it if that match was really violent. Like, it just turned flip side from being goofy, let's take the fucking turnbuckle pads off, and really they got seriously dirty and had a real good brawl. If it's an I Quit match, right? If they're going to do an I Quit match, like, really do an I Quit match. I want this to be Tully Magnum is what I want. I want this to be Tully Magnum Starcade. That would be nice. That'd be just a nice little change pace. They like, cause I don't want these. I think it's too late for one of them, but this does not have to be the comedy match break every fucking time. We can mix it up a little bit. So I kind of hope they do something non-goofy if they're going to go the route of I Quit. I would prefer it to be a little bit more serious and violent. It's not a little bit, a lot more serious and violent. Now they're going to do handcuff my balls to a fucking cactus match. Okay, great. Whatever. Get all the laughs you fucking can. But I want the sanctity of an I Quit match to be preserved, Joel, is what I'm trying to tell you. It's very important to me. It's a very important concept of pro wrestling that needs to be maintained and not bastardized. Bastardized? Is that a word? You know what I'm trying to say.
There was a elimination tag match a few days ago, which was won by Suzuki-gun team. I don't know if you saw this promo from Despy, but I'm going to put a direct quote here. So it's El Desperado in the ring at Korakuen Hall after the match, talking to the Roppongi 3K. He says, "You guys are three-time junior tag league winners, right? I can't imagine how you've won this thing three times in a row. Whether it's your individual abilities or your teamwork, you guys are not interesting at all. In this junior tag league, who am I looking forward to? Gedo and Togo, Phantasmo and Ishimori. You guys are like the chores before getting to the fun."
Oh.
I mean, fucking hell. Talk about, I mean, any kind of analysis from us, redundant. Even Phantasmo in his promo was like, "Look, I've got nothing more to say. Despy just nailed it there." So based on that, any opinions whatsoever about this Super Junior Tag League?
That's, well, no. But he... Despy sharing thoughts from this show, that's for sure. He's a listener. That's funny. I mean, he really laid it in there, huh? He laid it in there hard.
It was so good, Damon. Like, I would recommend people checking it out because just like the venom in his voice as well. And the way Shoyno were just sitting in the ring there, just taking it all like...
Yeah, I was about to say, what are they doing?
Naughty little schoolboys just looking really sorry for themselves.
They're all scolded dogs. Wow, that's good. See, I like that. I like that. That honesty in pro wrestling. So that's a shoot, brother. So they just like went back to the ring or went back to the locker room with their tail between their legs and took it. No, didn't result in any. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah, that was it. I mean, with a question from Mark says, if, and I suppose it's a big if Roppongi 3K split at the conclusion of Super Junior Tag League, who would you turn here? An angry show or goth like Yo? I've always said that Yo, I think, has got good heel upside. But, that, I mean, to me, that's the only way you can make this Super Junior Tag League interesting is to use it as a vehicle to break up Roppongi 3K. But in all likelihood, just based on previous experience with New Japan, we are looking at the comeback story for Roppongi 3K to put it all together and win the Super Junior Tag League for a fourth time to the excitement of absolutely nobody.
Yeah. Isn't this the vehicle that we use each and every, 2 years now? This is where they split up. Yep, this is where they go their own way. Yep, this is the barbershop window moment we were all looking for. It hasn't happened yet. And I would say we are probably not going to get that. Like, I'm not, like, I just feel like I don't want to get burned again. Like, I don't want to fall for it again. So I'll say they do win it the fourth time. It's because you're right. It is a New Japan thing to have that happen and then have them, you know, find their mojo again. And we got to sit through a fourth win for this fucking team.
Yeah, so you guys look forward to that tournament coming up this week. Let's move on to Strong then. So this was the Tag Team Turbulence. First match, we have Bateman beating Kevin Knight in 7 minutes 47 seconds with This Is A Kill. And I think it's always good to see Bateman getting a win. He's a useful guy to have around. He's a solid hand. He does great work getting new guys over. I know he's respected by his peers. He's respected by local fans. You know, we all want the sexy names like, you know, your Tom Lawlers and your Josh Alexanders, but a roster needs guys like Bateman exactly for the benefit of guys like Kevin Knight to, you know, help with their development. Yep. Second match, we had a six-man tag with Adrian Quest, Fred Ross, and Carl Fredericks defeating Mysterioso, Royce Isaacs, and Jarrell Nelson. Carl Fredericks pinning Mysterioso following the MD. This match was notable for a truly bizarre anecdote that Alex Kozlov was telling about Mysterioso going on tour with Pavarotti. It was really strange. I don't know if it was a joke or what, but it's just a weird little guy. A very fun match. It was a nice mix of stars. I'm glad we're getting to see more of the West Coast Wrecking Crew. I hope that continues. And I'm pleased to see Carl Fredericks picking up a win because he is in danger. We talk about this a lot. He's in danger of getting lost in the shuffle and Strong because there are others who've made a bigger impression than him. So he needs to watch out. I think he's got all the tools, but he's still missing that standout match for me. And the third match, the main event, the Tag Team Turbulence Finals, where the Good Brothers defeated Violence Unlimited with a Magic Killer after 10 minutes, 59 seconds. I mean, this is a Good Brother in a nutshell, really. Absolutely fine TV match. It was functional, but it was totally forgettable.
Yeah.
And, you know, this is a tournament final, and maybe they only had 10 minutes to work, but I wanted more. But I didn't expect more because it's the Good Brothers and there's a hard, like, 3.25-star ceiling on their matches. I thought Brody King worked really hard to make it special. We did some flips, which was nice, but I don't know. There's nothing special or unique or exciting about the Good Brothers. They are okay. They are an okay tag team. So enjoy.
Yeah, they always find a way to resurrect a career. Is that the word? Is that what I'm looking for? Like, you always find a way to get in, right? Always find a way to get in and survive pro wrestling. What did you think of this tournament? I gotta be honest with you. It was there.
Underwhelming.
Yeah, it was there. Right? A little, you know, where was the drama? Where was the excitement? Where was the, I don't know. It felt very flat to me. And again, not just because of the winners. I think everybody kind of knew at the very least we would be seeing them in the finals. Good Brothers, that is. We knew that we would be seeing them in the finals. They weren't losing in the first round. But it did feel like this was the... Was this like the showcase of reintroducing everybody to the Good Brothers?
Yeah, I mean, we said that from day one. This was a vehicle for getting the Good Brothers back into high-level New Japan stuff.
Yeah.
That's not exciting to me. I don't think they're exciting. An exciting tag team. There were some good bits in this tournament. I think it was the Violent Unlimited West Coast Wrecking Crew match, I think, that I enjoyed a lot last week. But I mean, I don't know what else to say. I will tell you that Tama Tonga and Carl Anderson are already going at it on Sherman. Twitter, laying really? Groundwork for their feud. So
yeah,
that's it. I'm going to give you that noise.
Is all right. So are we putting the fucking nail in the coffin on our COVID tag team elevation tour 2021? We doing the final encore and we're done. Tag teams are dead again. Are we at that point?
If they are booked for a show in Japan, then I will be very scared for the health of the tag division.
Give me scale of 1 to 10 in your gut and in your heart and in your brain and in the, right behind your liver. Ooh, are these guys winning the straps?
Yeah, I think that's inevitable. Wow. It's a question of when they are able to make it out to Japan to do that.
Nobody wants this. Does anybody want this?
I mean, I hope, can they just feud over some US tag titles?
That's what I'm saying. Can we create
the Impact tag titles or make up some strong tag titles or something? Just please keep away. I said on Twitter, people, you know, all the people that were ragging on the 37-minute LIJ Dangerous Techers matches, you will be on your knees fucking begging for those days to be back once you're seeing GOD versus Good Brothers round 6 to did absolutely dead reactions.
We did so well for so long, and well I mean, so they won this tournament, right? The strong tournament. Are we there's no tag championship here, right?
Correct.
So this is just a tournament. Again, no titles. I didn't think I missed anything here. Wouldn't that have been a great move? We're sitting here thinking about them winning those titles. I don't think we see them in Japan anytime soon. You think we see them in Japan anytime soon? Going on with what's going on over there? Why would they?
It seems unlikely with the way things are escalating both in the States and the state of things in Japan. I think we're a long way from that.
Right. So, okay. So now we just finished this tournament. Why couldn't we give them some titles? We have, the strong tag titles, whatever the fuck you want to call it, right? Or are we just going to feud over these Impact titles, which who gives a shit? But if that's the case, I'll take that over, IWGP tag, which again, they worked really hard in making this interesting. They worked really hard in making this. I mean, the fucking teams that held this title before, preposterous. No one gave a shit. And now we were, I don't want to go back to that. But again, they might not even step foot in Japan for a long time. So maybe, Joel, we're just doing this to get them front and center, but maybe this is just over the Impact titles. Maybe this just is something for GOD to do and Good Brothers to do, and everybody kind of stays separate. Maybe, right? This doesn't necessarily have to be Good Brothers walking out with straps at the Tokyo Dome, right? Doesn't have to be. Probably is, but doesn't have to be, is what I'm saying.
All right, well, I've got a huge list of questions here. But
all right, well, what do you want to do?
The problem is with this lockdown situation, I feel extremely guilty just like leaving Mali by herself. So, let's stop here, I think. How long have we done? 1 hour and 18 minutes.
1 hour and 18 minutes. You comfortable with that?
I'm okay with that. Are you okay with that? Or would you like to keep going?
I could stop. I mean, I think these people got gold as it is. They got John Cougar Mellencamp. They got, they got
Milkshake Kissing.
Right. We got Barry Windham. We got Milkshake Kissing. I think these fucking people, and this is free, by the way. I think you got some Kevin Kelly praise. We talked about Strong. We talked about all the rumors. We talked about Punk. We even talked a little AEW. But we gave him gold, Joel. We gave him gold.
Agreed. So shut up and eat your pine cone. redcircle.com/shows/super-j-cast if you want to show us appreciation.
Yeah, don't give us money.
Discord link in the show notes at CobraKawaii and ProWrestlingTees.com/super-j-cast for one of our great t-shirts. Big thank you to Editor Dan. Find him on Twitter at LousyHero219. Subscribe to the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network for other great shows. Give us a 5-snake review on iTunes. Follow us on Twitter at SuperJCast. Thank you, everybody, for listening, and goodbye.